Starting Tzadizayin Amud Bet at the Mishnah. Machra Ktubata Omiktzata. Right, that's where we're up to? Okay. She sells her ktuba, either the whole thing. You know, she sells the land for her ktuba. Omiktzata. Mishkina, right? She sells her ktuba itself we're talking about, right?
Oh, property for
it. Right, property for it, yeah. Okay. So she sells property of her husband's for her ktuba, or for part of her ktuba. Okay, let's say she wants to just get a partial payment. Mishkina ktubata, okay, she uses it as a collateral. Omiktzata, okay. No, I'm sorry, it's not that she uses the collateral, she mortgages the property, okay? So, right, she basically gives them, it's like a collateral, she gives it toward, right, someone who she owes money to. Yeah, it is a collateral, okay, or part of it. And it's basically, in any of these cases, right, she gave it to somebody else, either the whole thing or part of it. She's basically, you know, redeemed either part of it or all of it. The rest of it needs to be done in the court. Okay, why? What do we learn? What does that mean? Remember, we've been talking about if a woman's selling her property for mizonot or for ketubah. So according to the Tanakhama here, once she starts selling money for her ketubah, even just part of it, she no longer is entitled to mizonot. And therefore, the rest of it has to be done in the court, because we said that the ketubah can only be done in the court, right? To sell property for the ketubah has to be done in the court. So therefore, she has to do it in the court.
I assume we're going to get a discussion about what part of means.
No, part because of it means any part of it.
90%? I mean, it could be like everything but Azuz. I mean,
it could be. Yeah, it could be anything. And as soon as the point of this shita is, as soon as she starts to sell land for the purposes of her ketubah money, she starts to redeem her ketubah money. We've discussed this all along, right? To what point does she get mizonot? So according to this opinion, as soon as she starts to get some of her ketubah money, she no longer can get mizonot. She's done with
this
mizonot.
This contrast 2 days ago where they were saying, where Rav Yossi said she shouldn't disclaim what she's doing because she could be that she's only doing part.
Right.
So that she can do both.
Right, she can do both. So we're going to see the next opinion, okay?
So
Chachamim omrim, mocheret yafilu arba'a v'chamisha pa'amim. Okay, she could keep, you know, selling a part of land to get some of her ketubah and then another part of the land to get more of her ketubah. No problem. Okay? Umocheret lemizonot shelo bebeitin. And she could still continue to sell for mizonot at the same time. The only time she can't get mizonot is if she's received her entire ketubah money.
Okay?
That's his opinion. Veh, and then, okay, most of them explain, this is etzah tova, okay? Veh kotevet, right, going back to what we saw yesterday, is you have to do this, or is it just a good thing to do? It's smart for her to do. Veh kotevet lemizonot macharti. What's the thing? She's selling a lot of land here, right? So if she says, on the land that she's selling for mizonot, she should write, I sold this for mizonot, so that it won't look like she sells everything for mizonot, and the Mefarshim say it's going to look like she's a Rav Tanuta, like she's a woman who just eats an absolute ton, that she's selling so much land for mizonot. Because it's not clear. She can get mizonot, she can get ketubah money. So if she's selling tons of land, and it becomes unclear what she's doing it for. So better off to specify so people don't, you know, suspect you that you're eating an absolute, you know, hoarding food. Okay. And then our last one, which we saw yesterday, Ugrusha lotim kor ela bebetin. Right? And then we had different opinions. Is this according to Tanakhama? Is it according to Rabbi Shimon? Right? What's the issue here? Is it Ugrusha can only do it bebetin because the whole issue of lotit bazeh bebetin, right? A person doesn't want his wife to be embarrassed, doesn't really care about his grusha. Is that the reason? Or do we say it's Rabbi Shimon, who basically had this opinion that the grusha is like the grusha is the issue that she doesn't have mizonot. And because she doesn't have mizonot, whatever she's demanding is her ketubah, and that has to be done bebetin. Okay, that was only according to Rabbi Shimon. Okay. Matniti mane. Okay, so now the beginning of our Mishnah seems to be Tanakhama, right? It's interesting. Usually Tanakhama doesn't argue with Chachamim, right? So here we have an unattributed Tanaitic opinion that disagrees with Chachamim. The Gemara is going to say that, by the way, this Mishnah, the first opinion, that once you start demanding part of your mizonot, you can no longer demand the once you start taking your ketubah, you can no longer get mizonot. That is Rabbi Shimon. He detanya Rabbi detanya machrak ketubata mishkenak ketubata astak ketubata apotiki laacher. And as she writes the rights of it to somebody else, ein la mizonot. Okay, so somebody's, the first opinion is, if she sells her ketubah, if she turns it into a collateral to pay a debt back, if she writes it off to somebody else, she doesn't get mizonot. Okay, the Zion says, right, the Tosefta doesn't say Divrei Rabbi Meir. Some text says it is Rabbi Meir. Anyway, Rabbi Shimon Omer, here's the important part, Af al pi shelo machra velo mishkenah ketubata, ela machatzita, avda mizonoteha. Okay, as soon, even if it's only part, right here, machatzita doesn't mean half exactly. It means even if she's only done part, she loses her mizono. Okay, so now they're going to say, we're assuming this must be the machloket. L'meimer to Rabbi Shimon Savar, t'lo amrina miktzat kesef, kichol kesef. Right, we don't say that part of the money is like all of the money. Rabbanan Savre, amrina miktzat kesef, kichol kesef. Right, so... right. The miktzat kesef here that he's talking about is that Rabbi Shimon is saying having a little bit left over doesn't mean that you still have a ketubah. Okay? In other words, that's the miktzat he's referring to. If you have a little bit of your ketubah money left over, we don't say it's as if you have your whole ketubah left over, in which case you can still demand mizonot. He thinks... right? A little bit left over doesn't really count. You've already started getting your ketubah, you no longer get mizono, which fits in with our whole, we've seen this a lot, right? About, there's an opinion of Shmuel, HaTovah ketubah tabe beitin, if she already goes to start demanding her ketubah, she doesn't have mizono. How this works in with all the other opinions that we've seen is a question. In other words, does that just mean HaTovah, all of her ketubah, then you would have to explain, he means, you know, depending on which opinion he holds by. So, anyway, Rabbi Shimon's saying here, miktzad is not kikulo, right? We have this concept in all sorts of places, right? Miktzadayom kikulo, like in Shiva, right? Part of the day is like the whole day, so you don't sit the whole day of the first day and the last day. So miktzad kesef, he says, right, we don't say miktzad kesef is kikulo kesef, and therefore it's as if she hasn't accepted all of her, it's as if she, the fact that she started demanding her, the miktzad kesef that's left over her of her ketubah does not mean she has a full ketubah, and therefore she can't ask for mizonot anymore. And Rabbanan Savre, Amrina miktzad kesef kichol kesef. Right? We say that it's like the whole thing, and therefore once she that the fact that she has a little bit of her ketubah left over is as if she has her whole ketubah, and therefore she can continue to demand mizonot as long as she hasn't gotten her whole ketubah. But we can't say that that's the case. Why? Okay, by the way, this was introduced by Lememra. Lememra means, are you trying to say that this is the case? Because if you say that this is the case, we're going to have a problem. That's their machloket. Now, if you say miksa kesef kol kesef, or we don't say miksa kesef kol kesef, we're going to assume that you would say it when it comes to other concepts as well. So we're going to connect this now to the concept of bitulim of a woman. Okay, when it comes to the Kohen Gadol. Remember the Kohen Gadol? We've learned this a bunch of times. Detanya. Okay, ha'ibcha shamin aluhu. We know from otherwise that it's exactly the opposite. Rabbi Shimon's the one who dafka says that we're going to see miktzat betulim is as if she has no betulim. Like if she already has no some signs that she's not a betula, we're going to treat her as if she's not a betula at all. Okay, whereas the Tanakhama is going to disagree with him there. So where do we see this? Titania v'hu isha b'vtuleha. Okay, that's the v'hu isha b'vtuleha yikach. The Kohen Gadol has to marry a betula. Prat lebogeret shekalu betuleha, divrei Rabbi Meir. Okay, what does that mean? A bogeret, we learned this already, someone who's already reached the gil of, you know, shtei sarot plus another 6 months, she's a bogeret. She already is not considered a betula, even if she's never had sex. Why do we consider her not a betula? Because we say that her hymen has grown to a certain extent that she's already not considered a betula. It's like she's lost some simanei betulim. So here, what do you see? Right, she's not a betula. Divrei Rabbi Meir, for Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, machshirim bebogeret. Okay, so he says that she's okay, and why would that be? Right, because miktzat. Right, right, because then you would say. Okay, Right? She is considered, according to him, she's considered a betula, even though she only has some of the simanim of a betula. So you see that miktzat is like kulo. Okay? Because you have tzat simanei betulim, right? And it's because, right? So that would mean you're a betula. So what do you see? Miktzat is kekulo. Right? What?
The opposite of what they said.
Right, the opposite of what he said before, that you can't say miktzat is kula. So now, that's what they think. But then they say, no, you're comparing apples and oranges, okay? What's true for money isn't true for betulim, and that's because, not because they're different things, but the whole halakha of betulim has to do with the drasha and the pasuk. It doesn't have to do with this concept, okay? It has to do with the way they darshan the pasukim. Now, obviously, we all know that often when they darshan pasukim, it's because they have a certain mindset that affects how they darshan the pasukim. So it's a bit of a weakness here. But the Gemara isn't bothered by that. The Gemara says, Ha tempe cry plige, they're arguing over the pasukim. Rabbi Meir Savar Bitula. Okay, now remember, we judged on this pasuk. It's Bivtuleha. That word is made up of three parts. Bi, right, the bi before that, the bitula, and the bituleha. Right? Okay, you can write it like this. So it's got three parts, so we're going to darshan it. Rabbi Meir Savar Bitula, afilu miktzat bitulim. Right, the word bitula seems to imply even if you have some simanim of bitulim. Bituleha, ad ika kulu. You have to have all the simanim. That added that you need all the simanim. Bitulim, ad ika kulu bitulim. Bivtuleha comes to include, now this isn't relevant for our purposes, bikadarka in shalokadarka lo. Okay, bivtuleha would say that depending on how you had sex, right? Only if you had normal sex rather than sex shalokadarka, which is anal sex. When you say betula, it sounds like she has to be entirely a betula. Betuleha afilu miktzat betulim, right? That comes to teach you, even if she has some simanim of a betula. And bivtuleha shu kol betuleha kayamim. Okay? And that's that even if she had be'ila, right? Shalom avala afilu shalo kedarka, right? Even if she had I think it means even if she had Bia Shalo Kedarka. Okay? Right? Shetia Betula Gemura Shalo Nivalakla. Right? Right. Bekedarka Ben Shalo Kedarka. Okay? So they each have a difference in how they darshan the Pesukim, and therefore that's not the reason. Okay? So now we're going back to saying that Rabbi Shimon says it's Miktzat HaKesef is like Kechol HaKesef, and Rabbi Nan says Miktzat HaKesef is Kechol HaKesef. And now we're going to have a case. Hayi idita detafsa kasa de kaspa biktubata. Okay? She took a, how do they translate it?
Silver goblet.
A what? A silver goblet? Oh, that's interesting. So there was a different explanation. Okay, fine. Anyway, maybe I'm confusing it with something else. Okay. She takes a silver goblet, right? A kos of kesef, biktubata, katava mazone. In other words, she took this goblet for her ketubah, okay? I assume, right, wasn't for all of the ketubah money, it wasn't the whole value, but it was for part of it. Then she goes to Kate Mizono. Atai lekame derava, amar lehu, liatme, so now, right, she goes, they go before Rava, and he says to the Yatomim, right, what are the Yatomim saying? They're saying, we're not giving her Mizono, she already started collecting her ketubah. So what does he say? Zilu havala Mizono. Okay, go give her mazonot, because late dechash lahad Rabbi Shimon de'amar lo amrina miktzat kesef kechol kesef. Okay, we don't hold like Rabbi Shimon, and we don't think that the miktzat kesef is kechol kesef, and therefore we allow her to take her mazonot. Shalach le'rabba b'rei de'rabba le'rab Yosef mocheret shelo bebeitin sricha shvua o ein sricha shvua. Okay, this is a very strange question. There's a lot of different opinions about what this means. Okay? But the basic thing, I'll explain what it means, and then we'll explain what kind of shvua we're talking about. He wants to know, if you sell land outside of the court, okay, which we said you can do, right, depending on the situation, she sells land to get her ketubah money or mazonot or whatever it might be. She takes land from the estate and she sells it. Does she need to swear when she takes this land or not? Now, the obvious swear we'd be talking about would be what? We know she's supposed to swear to the Yatomim that she hasn't gotten her ketubah money. But that would be a strange question. Does she need a shvua or not need a shvua? Because you always need to take a shvua. So why would that be the question? Some of the Mepharshim do think this is the question, but it's very hard to understand it that way. On the other hand, if you say otherwise, then what, we're demanding that she swear on that and she swear on something else? Like, it's a lot of swearing that we're making her do, especially when, in general, we don't like to have people swear. So there's different opinions. If you don't accept that, what she's swearing about? Is she swearing that she sold the money for the proper amount that it was valued at? Is she swearing that she hasn't taken other money for the ketubah yet, I think, which is sort of like the other shvua, but it's a little different. How is it different? It's, that she hasn't collected, it's a little different. It's the yatomim she has to swear to that before, when the husband was still alive, she didn't take any of the tuba money. This shvua would be saying, when I sold this land, I didn't take any more than what was expected to be what was coming to me, basically. So does she need a shvua or does she not need a shvua? If she did it, shalom abeitim. So before we even get an answer, we get a question. Okay? So Rabbi Berei de Rava sent to Rav Yosef, okay, and Rav Yosef sends back, Vitibayela Chachraza. Why didn't you ask me an even better question, which is, does she need to announce? Remember we learned this before, that she needs to announce. There were certain situations where we didn't make her announce beforehand, but in general, an almanah needs to announce, to go to court and say, I'm selling, whenever you sell property of orphans, we want to make sure that you're going to get a good price for it. So you have to make a big announcement. I'm selling this property, and wait 30 days to see, you know, what all your options are. Who comes to buy to make sure that you get the proper, the proper price for it. So that's what you should have asked. So Amar Leh says back to him, Hachraza lo kamet baile. I wasn't asking about Hachraza because I knew about Hachraza. Why? De Amar Abizera Amar Rav Nachman, Almanasha shama la'atzma lo astava lo klum. If an almana, okay, now here's the situation. An almana has land, okay? She takes land from the father's estate. She evaluates it, and she basically takes it for herself and says, I'm taking this land. I think this land is valued at 200 zuz. That's the value of my ketubah. I'm taking it, okay? And she just takes it without going to, like, a shamai, right, an evaluator to evaluate the land, without going to beitin. So if she does that and takes it for herself, lo astava lo klum, okay? So now, there's two options of what she could be doing. Either she takes it for herself, or she evaluates it on her own and sells it based on the evaluation that she did. Right? When you go to sell your house, what do you have to do before you sell it? You have to get an evaluator. But she, an appraiser, thank you. So she gets she appraises it herself and then sells it for that price. So, hey chidami, what's the case here? Ida ichruz, if she already announced I'm selling this land, my lost avalo klum. Now, it must be then that she got the reasonable price for it. It wouldn't, right? If she makes a big announcement about it, it should be fine. El alav, it must be that this case where it says lo astava lo klum is de lo ichruz. Ula atzmahu de lo astava lo klum. Now, if she doesn't announce it, it must be that what did she do? She took it for herself. She said, I'm taking this land instead of, you know, going and getting whatever, I'm just taking this land. This will be my ketubah money, and I'm going to keep this land for myself. But that's why lo astava lo klum. That's why this obviously wouldn't be good, because she evaluated herself and she basically sold it to herself. That doesn't count. But hala acher. But it must be that if she sold it to somebody else, masha asta, it must be that it works, because if she sold it to somebody else, okay, whether she announced it or didn't announce it, even if she appraised it herself, it shouldn't matter, because if the other person agreed to buy it, then they agreed to buy it. If you end up selling your house without an appraiser, well, it must be that the other guy agreed to it. And then you can't say the mecher is batel. He was a willing participant.
That's not the issue here. The issue is if the children are getting extra or not. It's not
extra. Right. So first they want to say, what he's using this for is to say, clearly, okay, so he wants to say that almanasha shama la'atzma lo astava lo klum must be in the case where there was no hachraza, she took it for herself. That's what they're assuming. But if there was hachraza, it would be okay. So now, what are they saying? I'm sorry, but if there was no hakraza and someone else bought it, it would be okay. In which case, what do you see here? You don't necessarily need to be machriz. That's what they think. So then they say, no. La'olam di'ichruz. It wasn't a case. You don't have to explain it that way. That was all to say, clearly you would need hakraza, and therefore I didn't ask the question. And there, I'm sorry. It would imply, tafkanat, that you don't need hakraza. One second. Right, that you would, it would apply here. Right. In other words, it would imply, according to this reading of that text, which again we're going to see, you don't necessarily have to read it that way, but it would imply that you don't need hachraza if you're selling it to other people. You would only need hachraza if you're taking the land on your own, for yourself. But they say no. La'olam de'ichruz. It isn't a case where she announced it. Udik amrela man shamlech. Okay? What does that mean? They said she did make an announcement, but kol o, there was no appraiser, it was no good. Okay? Now, how do we know that this would be, that right, that this would, in other words, and then what's the point? That you would need hachraza. In other words, hachraza, and even a hachraza is not enough. Right? Because, okay. What's that? What she's saying here is that there was hachraza. Okay, she announced it, but then she took the land for herself. In other words, she said, I'm happy to sell this land, but then she just, you know, she announced it to everybody, but she didn't sell it, and she appraised it on her own. So if she, just because she announces it, doesn't help, basically. It doesn't help the issue of the appraisal. And that's the connection here is, right, we're connecting these two things. Just because she announced it doesn't mean that it's okay that she appraised it herself. Because they could say to her, Man Shamlach, who appraised this for you? Kiahi, and here we have a case where this happened. Tahu Gavra, Davkidu Gabe Kista Diyatme. Someone, this was the word I didn't remember. That's why I got confused with the Kasa and the Kista. Kista is, what is it? It's fodder or something, right? Okay. So someone gave a pikadon of fodder to the Yatomi. Azal Shama Lenafshe. In other words, what did they say? We owe your father money. We're going to give you right now fodder. You keep it as collateral. We'll pay you the money eventually. What happened? The Yatomim said, well, look, we have this fodder. We're just going to keep it for ourselves. Azal Shama Lenafshe. They decided, okay, well, he gave us fodder. We're going to evaluate that it's worth 100 zuz, let's say. Okay, I'm sorry. Oh, no. They evaluated it. Dafka Be'arba Me'azuze. They say, this fodder is worth 400 zuz. Okay? They evaluated it for themselves. Okay? Now, what happened? Iyakir. Time went on, and it went up in value. Kam b'shitmeh. Okay? It now became worth 600. Okay? So now what happens? Atta the kameja, Rabbi Ami. The guy comes before Rabbi Ami and says, hey, they have my fodder. It's worth 600. I only owe 400. I want my 200 back. So now what's going to be the question? Was it a good, when they said we're accepting this at 400, was that, did they accept it at that point? Was there a kinyan? Once there's a kinyan, well, then it went up in their property. And if it didn't count, because they evaluated it on their own, and therefore it didn't count as a kinyan, really doesn't count until the guy actually gives it to them and gives them the rights to it and says, we're going to evaluate it now, etc. Then it went up in his property, right? And then he only has to give them 400 from the 600. So Amarle, man shamlach. He said, well, who evaluated? The Yatomim? Oh, it doesn't count. Okay? And therefore, you get to get the extra money, basically, because that evaluation is basically meaningless. There was no kinyan. And there we have it. So in the end, what do we see? That we can't really figure out from here. You can go both ways. Whether you need hachraza, you don't need hachraza, we don't really know. Okay, the source was inconclusive. And yet the halacha says in the end, hilchata tzricha. Now remember, we didn't even talk about the shvua aspect. Right? He asked a question on shvua. Then they said, well, why don't you ask a question on hachraza? And then he tried to say, well, I didn't need to ask a question on hachraza because it was clear to me from the source. But then they said, can't really be clear from that source necessarily. And then they say, hilchata tzricha shvua ve'ena tzricha hachraza. Mm-hmm. Okay, in the end, she doesn't necessarily need to do the hachraza, but she does need to do the shvua. Again, it's unclear, though, what shvua we're talking about. So it becomes difficult, la halacha, you know, what we learn from the sugya in terms of what shvua she needs to say. Whether I sold it for the price it was really supposed to be sold for, or I took no more than what I was supposed to take, Or are we going back to this original Shavuot Yatomim that I didn't take anything in the husband's life, which seems very unconnected to the sugya, so it's hard to say it's that. On the other hand, like I said, the weakness with that is we didn't in general want to make this poor woman have to swear. Remember, we had this whole thing about a ketubah. We don't want to make it hard for the woman to get her ketubah. So to now have her swear two different Shavuot is very difficult. So it's a strange sugya in that sense.
Wouldn't it seem like you have to get an appraisal, though?
So, yeah, so it does seem like you'd have to get an appraisal, although what we've seen here is she can't appraise it herself if she's going to keep the money for herself. However, if she was to appraise it and someone were to buy it off of her, we can assume, right, it's all like a checks and balances system. We assume if someone's willing to buy it for the property, for the price she appraised it for, then it must be that it was a reasonable price. Although we're going to get to now, what if she sells it for totally different from its value? Okay, and now we're going to get to some problems that are going to come up as a result of that, or maybe not. And in some cases, it's going to work. In some cases, it won't. Almanah shaita ketubata matayim, umachra shaveh mana b'matayim. Okay, her ketubah was matayim zuz. She sold a plot of land that was worth 100 for 200 zuz. Okay, some guy didn't care, right? A new family came to town. They said, oh, yeah, they didn't check out prices. They didn't really realize. They bought it for a lot of money. And she got, right? So now what happens? What do you think? Does she get another 100? Or she got her Matayim Zuz? So she got her Matayim Zuz.
She got her Matayim Zuz,
right? It doesn't matter that the land was worth less. Oh, Shaveh Matayim Bimane. What if she sells something that's worth 200 for 100? Do you think then she gets her ketubah, more money?
Yes.
Okay, guess what? Nope. Why? Nitzkablak tubata. Why is that? Because she wasted this money, this land, basically. She was, so to speak, not very smart about it, right? She sold, she was given, basically, a plot of land of 200. The fact that she sold it for 100 was her fault.
She received her ketubah.
So she did, right. She received it. No, she received her 200.
But what if she sold?
She only got 100 in her hands.
But she got her ketubah
because she got the karka for 200 and she just messed up and sold it for 100.
What if she sold the land for 300?
Ah, so we're going to see in a minute. Okay? Yeah, that's exactly the next case.
Is there a connection?
Although they don't call it 300. They actually say 201. Okay?
Is this a reason why, going back to the last Mishnah, that they didn't want women to evaluate on their own?
Right. It could very well be that they were trying to protect also the woman from it, is what you're saying. That it wasn't just, don't evaluate on your own, and we want to be matriachotach, but also to prevent situations. Imagine also women in those days didn't sell property in general, I would imagine, and weren't so savvy about it, and could get taken advantage of, right? It's like the classic, woman goes into the mechanic, the car mechanic, and he just totally takes advantage of her because she has no idea what he's talking about. So, it very well could be that that's the situation here. We want to protect her from having that happen. But on the other hand, what we're also concerned is people taking advantage of Yatomim. We're always worried. It's like, Ger Yatom Va'almana. These are the people that are always talked about as getting taken advantage of. So here we have two of them getting taken advantage in different directions. The Yatomim on the one hand, the women on the other hand. But, we're really protecting both of them.
Are you talking by definition underage?
So we've discussed that it's not clear. That's part of the question. Like when she has to swear to the Yatomim, we saw this the other day. It could be they're adults, and the issue is that we don't know what the father did in his lifetime. Or it could be they're only ketanim because we're worried about people taking advantage.
I was wondering whether the default assumption is actually that.
There is no default.
There's a question raised.
Right. No, we don't really know. It's unclear entirely, I would say.
But it's also strange because her adversaries might be her own children and they could all be staying in the same household together.
Yes, right. It is complicated because she, in the end, for her own interests, could be doing things against her children's interests. And, unfortunately, we know situations where this goes on. Now, this goes, again, I think, if we look at the Masechet as a whole, I think a lot of what the halacha is dealing with is not typical cases. I think what the Gemara is dealing with, and this is why we've seen in some cases they side more on the woman's side and in some cases more on the man's side. I think what's really happening throughout the Masechet is concern of, individuals. Like a system has to protect itself from people trying to take advantage. So even though your general woman is not going to try to cheat her own her own yutomim out of money. You know, again, though, there are lots of situations in those days where there were many, right? Even if they weren't married to many wives, the wives died in childbirth, they had kids from other marriages. So on the one hand, yes, it wasn't all her kids, but even if you say it was her kids, or, you know, and even if you say she has rachmanu for these other kids also, we're worried about the unique individuals that will take advantage of the system and will lie and will cheat and will... So sometimes it's the man who might cheat, and sometimes it's the woman who might cheat, and sometimes it's the yatomim who might cheat. So the system is trying to protect in so many different directions, and that's why you might say on the one hand, oh, it's so much protecting the woman. On the other hand, but yet this is totally not protecting the woman. And I think what's really going on here is a way of like putting a fence around to protect all sorts of possible things that could happen with people taking advantage when it comes to other people's money. So, which could be anybody can take advantage, and you know, and like we said, the woman's in a bit of a more vulnerable situation, as are the yatomim, and therefore they need even more protection. But sometimes the husband's in a vulnerable situation because she controls, you know, all sorts of other money things of his. So it's also the husband could be vulnerable in this situations. And that's why sometimes it was against the woman. Yeah, like he gets married and she says, you know, and she has no betulim, and she says, well, it was from before, you know, like he's totally vulnerable. He has no idea. He has no way of proving it, no way of anything. And, you know, he put out all this money thinking she was a betula and she's not. So in some cases, it could be the woman taking advantage of the man. So I think, you know, that's why so many different directions here and things that could happen. And that's why there's no clear cut, oh, we're only worried about him, we're only worried about her, or depends on the situation, who we need to protect the most. Okay, now we're getting to Donna's case. Haitak ktubatam mana, okay? She had a ktuba worth 100. Umachra, right, this is just an example, it could be anything. Umachra shave mana vidinar. She sells a plot of land that's worth 101, okay? Bimane, but she sells it for 100. And she says, okay, I'm taking my ktuba from this land. Now what happened? The land was really worth more, right? And she kind of, you know, it's true she only got 100, but she took a plot from the yatomim. She cheated them out of their money. Okay, this goes into like din ona'ah, right? What's ona'ah? When you buy or sell something for, you know, a certain amount more or less than what it's worth. And that's asur. And if you do it in that way, mikra batel, okay? It's not a good kinyan at all. Okay, it doesn't work. Afilu hi omeret achzir dina liyorshim mikra batel. Even if she says, I'll give a dinar of my own to the yorshim, it's no good. Okay? She can't say, you know, the sale basically was a bad sale. Okay? And therefore, even if she says, I know I cheated you out of money by selling this for less money, but I'll pay you back, that doesn't work, according to Tanakama. Rashbag omer la'olam mikra kayam. No. It's fine. She sold it for more less money, but her mechra is kayam. Ad shetei sham unless what? Kidei shetishayer b'sadeh bat tisha kabin ubigina bat chatzi kav ukedivrei Rabbi Akiva beit rova hayta beit rova. Okay. So this means what? That if she sold it, let's say she sold a plot that was worth 101, and she sold it for 100. Now, what did she make them lose out on? On this plot of land that was worth a dinar. Now, if the plot of land that was worth a dinar, okay, let's say you divide the plot into 101 equal parts, and the one part that, right, the one dinar is worth, is a plot that you can actually use, like it's got use, okay? So a gina depends on what the size is, right? If it's a sadeh, you need a space where you can grow tish'a kabin's worth. In a gina, it's bachatzikav, okay? Depending on what you were selling, the question is, did that dinar's worth of land have a significant amount of value, okay, or whatever it might be, right? If it was, let's say she sold it, it was 100 dinars, whatever, you know. If that land was a significant amount that you could have done something with it, then it's no good. Now, she has to have, if it gets to that amount, then it wouldn't be good. But if it was less than that, where the sadeh wasn't really worth that much, you know, the amount, then she can just give them, you know, she obviously has to pay them back, which she made them lose out. She can't, but the sale was good, and then she just gives them a dinar's worth of land. You know, she could take it from a field, she could take it, whatever. But if there was already, right, that much, the dinar was, you know, it was a significant amount, then the sale is no good at all.
That wasn't exactly my question. Let's say she's an amazing businesswoman.
Okay.
The land is only worth mazus. and she stole it from
okay.
her dad.
So you want to say
because it seems like she.
That's what we said. That was the case. That was the first case, right?
No, it wasn't.
Right, and she sold the shavim mana b'matay. Oh, what if she sells it for 300? I see.
She sells more than her ketubah is worth. She
I see.
Pocket the difference.
So we're gonna get into this situation in the Gemara. Okay, the Gemara is going to talk about a situation like that where, like, you send a shaliach to sell something for you, and they sell it for a ton more. Who gets it? The shaliach, right? It's going to come up, right? And it's going to be similar to this. Okay, haytak tubata arba meotzuz. Okay, she has a 400 zuz ketuba umachra lezeb imaneh, and then she starts selling plots of land. Okay, so she sells a plot for 100, another plot for 100, ula acharon. Yafet manet v'dinar. Yafet. What does that work? Ulacharon. Yafet manet. Did you read that? Yafet manet v'dinar b'manet. What does that mean? Right. Okay. So the last one, she sells a karka that was yafet manet, meaning it was worth a manet for a manet It was worth a manet v'dinar b'manet. Okay. So in other words, the first two cases, she sells the first three people, she sells exactly for the worth. But the last sale she does, it probably could be anyone. I don't think it has to be necessarily the last. She sold in this way that we just said the mecher is no good, according to Tanakama, right? She sold a plot that was worth a mana v'dinar for a mana, okay? Which we said before, it's batel. So now the question is, are all of the sales she did batel, or do we judge this one independently? So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, "Shal acharon batel v'shal kula mechran kayam." Okay, we treat each one as a separate sale, and therefore all the previous sales were fine. Just the last one is no good. Okay, Gemara, Maishna sheva matayim b'maneh. In the case of the sheva matayim b'maneh, right, she sells a 200 for 100, and she writes, and we say your ketubah is good. Da'amre la at afsadit, right? You caused your own loss, so tough luck on you, right? We gave you a field worth 200, so you can't take any more from us. Shavemana b'matayim, okay? If she sold a mana for matayim, this is really what you're asking, Donna, in a different case, but the same kind of thing. Nami tema ana arvachna. She should say, hey, look, I brought in all that extra money. I should get the extra money. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm a Rav Ravua. Kan Shana Rebbe, here Rebbe is teaching us a halacha. What's he teaching us? Hakol, he's teaching us that he holds like a particular shita in this machloka we're going to see. Hakol lebaal hamaot. In other words, if someone does a sale for you, okay, then, are you missing the page? Oh, okay. Then what do we say? If someone does a sale for you, okay, they're your shaliach. And he is the shaliach is a great businessman, and he makes an amazing deal and wins all this, gets all this extra money that wasn't coming to him. Who gets it? The baal hamaot, the guy who owned the land. Okay, in this case, it's going to be the yatomim. So the woman was a shrewd businesswoman, sold the land for a lot more. In the end, she doesn't keep the rivachim. She keeps the money. In the end, she got her 200 zuz.
But she doesn't get more than that.
That's not fair, because if she undersells, she gets screwed too.
Right.
She only has downside, basically.
Right.
She doesn't get any upside.
Right. So the point is... Right. So part of it, what this is saying is this goes into the general principle of a shaliach doing a sale for someone else. So here, it's not specifically the woman in her ketubah. This would apply. That's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying this implies that Rebbe holds, we're going to see not everybody holds this way, by the way. Okay? The Rebbe holds, and that's why Rebbe put together the Mishnayot. Now here, again, we had this the other day. When Rebbe puts together the Mishnayot, does that mean he holds that way? Not necessarily always, but you have to decide, you have to think about what was Rebbe's goal when he put this together. But the Gemara is assuming his goal was to show this is what we hold like. That hakol lebaal hamaot, that when someone does a transaction and wins money, it goes, if they're doing it on behalf of someone else for their property, it goes to the original owner. Okay, now here we're going to see the machloket. Kidetanya. Hosifu lo achat yitera. Your shaliach goes to sell you something for you. Okay, he goes to the shuk and he wants to sell your chitim from your field. He sells them in the shuk, and the guy we sold it to, hosifu lo achat yitera. Okay, he gives him extra. Okay, one zuz extra, whatever it was, right? He gives him extra money. Hakol l'shaliach. The shaliach, okay, according to this opinion, okay, opposite from what we said, the shaliach gets everything. Okay? If the shaliach succeeded in winning the money, right, which in our case, the woman would get the extra, she would get the rabbah, and then she'd be able to get another 100 zuz. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Cholkin, they split the profits. Okay? In other words, if he gets an extra 100, right, she sells a plot for 200 instead of 100. So what would we say in our case? She would get an extra 50 from the Atomim, and they would benefit from the extra 50. Okay? She would have to give them 50. Notice, by the way, none of these opinions matches our opinion, right? You notice that? Okay, so where are we going with this? So now they say, wait, there's a lot more to go. So the Braita says this, but then they ask a question on this Braita. V'hatani, doesn't it say in another Braita, Rabbi Yossi Omer hakol lebal hama'ot? Oh, here's our opinion. The Rabbi Yossi himself says everything goes to bal hama'ot. So why does Rabbi Yossi in this Braita say cholking? If everything really goes to the original owner, if the shaliach got extra money, he has to give it back to the guy who sent him on his mission. I'm a Rami Brahama, lo kashya, don't worry. Rabbi Yossi says, hakol lebal hama'ot, and he says, cholkin, depends on the situation. Kam b'davar sheyesh lo kitzba, and this goes back to Ani's question from the very beginning. There's something sheyesh lo kitzba, that means it has a set price. Okay? Bekam b'davar she'ein lo kitzba, it doesn't have a set price. When there's something that has a set price, then they're hulking. When it's something that doesn't have a set price, like land, okay? It's interesting, by the way, the Mefreshim, you know, talk about what kind of things have set prices, what kind of things don't, which is obviously interesting because we all know that, you know, that fluctuates depending on where you live and what, you know, like they talk about certain fruits and things that don't necessarily fluctuate in price. And, you know, anyone who goes fruit shopping knows that every week the fruits are something different. So anyway, or maybe there's certain fruits. Anyway, it's interesting. But that's the basic concept. If it has a set price, then we're going to say we split it 50-50. If it doesn't have a set price, then we're going to say it all goes back to the Baal HaMa'ot, according to Rabbi Yossi again, right? Not necessarily the other opinion. So now we have the Rebbe was teaching us that we hold like Rabbi Yossi, that B'davar she'en lo kitzba, hakol le'Baal HaMa'ot. And that's why, that's the opinion in the Mishnah. Amar Rav Papa, Hilchata, davar sheyesh lo kitzba cholkin, davar she'en lo kitzba hakol lebal hama'ot. Okay, the way we paskin, he says, if it has a set price, we're cholkin. If it doesn't have a set price, hakol lebal hama'ot, which basically means Rav Papa's paskining like Rabbi Yossi. Maybe because Rebbe paskin like Rabbi Yossi, according to the way our Gemara is understanding. So now, my kamashmalan, they're saying, why were you teaching us this? Because everybody knows that Rabbi Yossi, we hold like him in general when there's these kind of machlokot. So what do they say? She knew Yedishanin and she knew Yehu. What are we teaching us? That it's true everyone knows that you hold like Rabbi Yossi. However, we needed this whole explanation within Rabbi Yossi that the Gemara just explained to us. That Rabbi Yossi, right? Because there's Rabbi Yossi in this Braita, there's Rabbi Yossi in that Braita. One says Cholkim, one says Hakol lebal hama'ot. And then we needed the Gemara to explain to us, oh, kama davar she'esh lo kitzba, kama davar she'en lo kitzba. And that's what Rav Papa was trying to teach us. That we dafka hold by the limud that they used to explain Rabbi Yossi's shita. And that's why he was telling us we paskin like that. Okay. Ibailu, another question. Amar le, zavin li litra. Somebody says, sell me a litra, which is a certain measurement, right? It's how do they explain it? It's half a core. Okay, someone says, sell me half a core. The Aza, I'm sorry, he goes to his shaliach, and he says, go sell for me half a core of my field. The Aza v'zabin le'kura. And he went and sold double the amount of the field. Okay, so now what's going to be the question? Does the kinyan work on the half a field, or does it not work at all? You understand? So, my mosif, do we say he was mosif al dvarav, who he added to what the guy said, litcha mihakane, and he actually did sell the first half core, but not the second. O dilma mavir al dvarav, this is a great concept, right? What do we say? You went against what I said, right? He didn't do what the mishalach wanted him to do, and therefore we say, you know, you were ma'avir al dvarai, and, you know, it's like, well, had I known that you were going to do that, I never would have sent you to do this, right? I never would have sent you as my shaliach.
Right,
and therefore, What?
Nobody writes anything down here.
Nobody writes anything down. But, you know, in our day and age, people also don't always. Yeah. There's a lot of inherent trust of people in other people. So, anyway, so do you say that Ma'birot Rav, who belit chanami lo kane, and therefore, right, the first field that he, the first half that he sold is also not a good kinyan, and the guy could go and collect his field from the other guy and say, look, I never, you know, I never wanted this guy to do this for me. It's no good. So Am Rav Yaakov min Har Pakot Mishmei de Ravina says in the Nevarina Tashma. Let's learn from here. Amar balabayit l'shlucho tein lahem chaticha l'orchim. A guy says to shaliach, give a piece to the guests. V'hu omer, and the shaliach goes to the people and says tlushtayim. Okay, v'hein natlu shalosh. Okay, here we have a few mishaps. He says give them one portion. The shaliach said take two portions. They took three portions. Now, what happened in the end? This is a great case. Turned out that all the food he had that he was giving out that they took turned out to be hektish. So
that's a cop out.
Okay. So now kulan ma'alu, everybody's chayav in me'ila. Okay, all of them. What's me'ila? Me'ila is when accidentally, right? You were using hektish. So let's see. If you say the guy's just mosif al darav, so then it would make sense. Mishum hachi balabayit ma'al. Because the balabayit then is moel, because he did, right? He told him, if you say that the whole thing the shaliach did for him is canceled because the shaliach went against his word, then the balabayit didn't do me'ila at all. It's all the responsibility of the shaliach. But if you say that he was mosif al darav, then it was the first thing that the balabayit said, right? The first portion. That the balabayit's responsible for the first portion. The shaliach is responsible in the ila for the second portion. And then the orchim are responsible in the ila for the third portion. Okay? So that, therefore, it would work. But iyamar ma'vir al dvarav have balabayit amay ma'al. V'hatnan, doesn't it say in a mishnah, ha-shaliach sha'asa shlichuto. And now here we're going to see it even more so. If a shaliach does his shlichut, exactly, he does exactly what the balabayit said. Balabayit ma'al. Lo sashlichuto. Oh, this is a question on this. Sorry. Now we're going to have a question. They say, but wait. The Mishnah itself says, if the shaliach, the mi'ila is a unique halacha. Why? If the shaliach does exactly what the balabayit said, and it turns out it was mi'ila, okay? The balabayit says, go sell my stuff, you know, or go there, and it turns out it was hekdesh. Balabayit assumes responsibility. It was his fault. Lo sashlichuto, but if he didn't do it properly, then shaliach ma'al. If he does anything sort of not properly, well, it's the shaliach's fault, and he assumes all the responsibility of mi'ila. So why here would the balabayit be responsible? So they say no, because hacha b'maya skinan da'amra lehu tlu achat mi da'ato shabalabayit ve'achat mi da'ati v'shaklu inu tlat. So you'd have to say our case is a case where he said, take one portion because the balabayit told you to take one portion. I'm telling you that you could take another portion. And then they took three. In that case, the balabayit's responsible. But with regular dinei mi'ila, we wouldn't say that. We would basically say that once the shaliach messes things up and does things on his own cheshbon, it becomes all on his own cheshbon. Okay, so we'll pick up from here tomorrow. We'll review from here because we're going to see different answers to this question. You know, we're going to try to figure out, is it considered mosif or ma'avir al drav? And how do we, you know, is the kinyan batel or not? We'll start back, we'll show how this case works in there, and then we'll add some more answers.